Chapter 6, 5th of January. New Year's resolutions. Why do we make them? Seriously. Going to start a new acting job is kind of like waiting in line for a big, scary roller coaster. You're nervous, excited, and yet can't shake off the notion that if this goes horribly wrong, you could die. Production sent a car to pick me up this morning at God knows what o'clock. So now I'm sitting in a barren Heathrow airport with duty-free clothes, staring at a departures board. Thrilling stuff. It's ridiculous, really. A flight up to Manchester Airport. Could have quite easily just taken the train. But no, production was insistent. It's cheaper, apparently. The flight was eventful. No, we didn't crash into the sea and have to live out our days on an uncharted island. No, there weren't snakes or a hostile takeover, thank God. However, there was a little old lady in my seat. She insisted it would take her the whole flight just to stand up again, so would I mind swapping? Didn't think too much of it until I realised I'd swapped my economy no-leg room chair for her business class free breakfast seat. I'm going to hell for this. First time flyer? The woman next to me asked as I craned my head over the back of my chair for the 9th time. There's really nothing to be afraid of. Not afraid, just having a moral crisis, love. I thought, oh, I'll fly all the time. I say all the time. In reality, it's once a year, maximum, and it's only ever to see my dad. I fly over for quality time that's supposed to last a week, but it's always without fail, cut short by Bethany ringing me up. You've got an audition in Holborn tomorrow morning. Great part. Can you make it? I'm supposed to reply with, I'm sorry, Bethany, but I'm in France with my darling dad who I've not seen for 10 months. We're trying desperately to get a tan, but both being ginger, failing badly. Tell casting they can either see me when I get back or miss out on me altogether. Their loss. Got to go now. Croissant time. Au revoir. But I don't, do I? I immediately spiral. Think, this could be the next job. I can't miss it. Must make this audition at all costs. There's a manic rush to pack. I spend money I don't have on extortionately priced last-minute flight back, beg my dad for forgiveness, and before I know it, I'm back in London after only a day away. I don't sleep because I spend all night learning lines, then, quick as a flash, I'm in front of a casting director's assistant with baggy eyes, sunburnt cheeks and unkempt hair. Never get the job, obviously, because who'd want to hire that hot mess? Today we're flying from London Heathrow. The woman beside me was rummaging through her purse. Seriously, if it's the takeoff that's bothering you, I have some mints in my bag. What for? I always find flying easier when you've got something to suck on. Oh yeah, I mused to myself. How hot is the pilot? Oh God, I said that out loud, didn't I? I sunk into my seat ready with a swarm of apologies. Before I realised, the woman was in hysterics, both hands over her mouth, trying not to burst out with laughter. Then, fuck, you're Jasmine O'Connell. I just made a blowjob joke in front of a 3-time Academy Award nominee. Her eyes went a little wide, her mood suddenly shaken by my outburst. She shuffled ever so subtly away from me. I don't blame her. I was staring. Sorry, I just... I blinked dumbly. I don't know how to recover from this. What? I'm your sister? Not like in a soap opera way. Just in a symbol of freedom Melissa Bishop way. Hello! It was Jasmine's turn to stare. Then, boom. Oh my God, you're Melissa! I've heard so much about you. She leaned across the armrest separating us and gave me a squeeze. She smelled like orange juice. I've been begging the office to give me your number so I could call you and introduce myself before it all kicked off, but I lost the chance. Please switch off all laptops and store them securely in the overhead lockers for takeoff and landing. Catherine said you absolutely nailed your audition. Said you were a right funny lass. I should have known. Would you mind putting your tray up? Thank you. I had a feeling you might be on this flight, but it would have been a bit weird if I'd gone up and down the cabin trying to find you. Can you imagine? Me going to every woman on the plane, excuse me, are you about to be my sister? Please feel free to now walk about the cabin.
So, how are you feeling about it all? I've tried to do some research, but when the script is such a combination of real events and fiction, it's tricky, you know? And I don't know what the production team are on. I've had 9 edits since last Monday, not including the 2 emails I got last night that I daren't look at.
Can I interest either of you in some tea or coffee?
Not for me, thank you. Are you staying at the Grand Hotel or round the corner? I like to be where they put everyone else. Hate being on my own. Did this one job and I was in a different place entirely to the rest of the cast. They'd all been put up in a hotel, able to have dinner together, drinks, laughs, and I'm being driven 20 minutes in the other direction, to the middle of nowhere, because they thought I would want somewhere nicer. What's nice about eating by yourself?
We will shortly be landing. Please return to your seats. Holy crap, Jasmine O'Connell doesn't shut up. Like it bothers me. She was speaking to me. Me! And not because a script had told her she had to.
Almost can't believe I'm writing this, but I'm going to dinner with Jasmine O'Bloody Connell. At least, I'm supposed to be. I don't quite know how it's going to happen now I'm sitting in my hotel room with no way to contact her. Don't have her phone number. Don't have her room number. Bloody hell. It's not going to happen, is it? Jasmine will probably get room service. I'll wander across the road for a meal deal and sit in my room watching trash TV thinking about what might have been. I should have asked for her room number, not just got off the lift at my floor. But I was nervous and she wouldn't stop talking. Seriously, I know more about Jasmine than I probably do about Ian at this point. She's an only child. Her dad is an executive producer, not that it's affected the trajectory of her career. Yeah, right. She loves food markets and spoken word nights. She's trying to take up crochet, but just can't find the time. She's a Leo, thinks diet culture should be illegal, is allergic to nuts and shellfish and what else? Oh yeah, she hates a new fringe. I know Jasmine's somewhere up in the high heavens of the hotel. She's probably in a suite or something. Does this hotel even have suites? Never seen a suite, let alone been in one. There's probably pictures of a suite in the information book. Let's have a nosy. Someone knocking on the door. Where's the do not disturb sign gone? I found Jasmine in the hallway looking a little lost.
I thought I'd misremembered your room number from when we checked in.
She laughed nervously.
Still on for dinner, or?
Yeah, course, I blurted out a bit too eager. Just need to change. Into what? I screamed internally to myself.
Oh, fab. Okay.
She squeezed past me and into my room. It was basically a bed in a cupboard with an ensuite the size of a shoebox attached. Jasmine placed her designer handbag on the mattress runner, then perched herself elegantly beside it. I'm not really the striptease type, but all right. Come on in, I'll whack some music on and do my best. Jasmine's face flooded with horror.
I'm sorry, she yelped. I should have just waited in the hall.
I raised my hands to stop her from leaving. I'm kidding. Chill, sit back down. I'll change in the bathroom. I grabbed my nicer clothes from my suitcase. Still a top and leggings, but at least these didn't have holes in the crotch.
I'm so sorry, Jasmine said again through the bathroom door. I'm not very good at this.
Not good at what?
This. Starting a new job. Meeting new people.
I stepped out, one shoe not yet on. Could have fooled me, sis.
Chapter 7, 6th of January. Note to self. After eating a 12-inch garlic chicken pizza, brush extra hard before bed.
Last night feels like a dream. Constantly wondering if it happened. All Jasmine and I did was eat food and chat. The conversation wasn't even that thrilling, just trivial stuff. But I was talking with somebody famous. Really famous. Not that she acted like it.
Tilly had drilled the rumours about Jasmine's diva-ish behaviour into me before I left.
Like yelling at runners for giving her regular milk rather than almond. Getting costume designers fired for dressing her in unflattering colours. Snapping a boom mic clean in half because it had gotten too close to her face. I thought back to last night when Jasmine could barely pluck up the nerve to ask the waiter for some tomato sauce. Found myself shaking my head amused.
Tilly had clearly been having me on.
You couldn't have got your lines more perfect if you tried, I reassured Jasmine, passing back her script. Despite this, she continued to pace nervously around her tiny trailer of a dressing room. It wasn't luxurious, like I'd expected, but plain, plastic, and smelling like your average campervan.
You seem pretty calm for a first day on set, Jasmine noted, crumpling up today's call sheet and sides into her pocket.
Oh, I've met you. Scary bit's over for me now. Jasmine's eyes narrowed.
You think I'm scary?
I chuckled again, tomato sauce coming to mind. No, definitely not.
Well, that's nice to hear.
Jasmine wrinkled her nose playfully.
You're not scary either.
Oh, I don't know about that. You haven't seen me act yet. No one made a good first impression today. The director, Andrew Dale, first thoughts? Bit of a wanker. He keeps doing this weird judgmental pout when he's giving notes and referring to me as you. I don't know if he's trying to establish dominance or he genuinely has no idea who I am or what my name is.
You, I need you sat at that table, fast as you can.
I tried not to give him the finger and just sat where I was told. Jasmine arrived on set with one of the runners hovering so close he almost tripped her up. Andrew cheered, open-armed.
Right, quick chat about the scene. We've moved a bit of the dialogue about.
Jasmine's face fell.
Just a few words swapped here and there, nothing major. Now, if we do a line run with Melissa. Yes, you. Maybe we can get these changes into that pretty little head and then start shooting. Hmm?
Cross out bit of a wanker. Replace with massive wanker. The rest of the morning was spent at that god-awful table, cringing every time the script supervisor came over to correct Jasmine on another line mistake or continuity error.
You lifted your hand just a fraction too early, and you lean onto the table at the start of the line if I were to meet a man who, rather than at the end. Also, Andrew has asked that you try.
I need a minute,
Jasmine suddenly said, placing her head in her hands wearily.
Like some air.
She headed straight for the fire escape, despite Andrew's protests.
Jasmine, we have a break scheduled in 20 minutes.
The door slammed shut, leaving the entire set uncomfortably silent.
And so it begins,
Andrew muttered under his breath, sitting back at his monitor. The first AD Benjamin took a step in my direction.
You might as well take 5-2, Mel. I don't know how long Jasmine will be.
I shrugged. She said a minute. I gave Andrew a wicked smile.
I mean, we all waited 40 minutes for camera B to get its shit together. What's 60 seconds for Jasmine to do the same, eh?
It was a long minute, but eventually the fire door did clunk back open. Jasmine returned to her mark, her eyes a little puffier, but nothing a makeup check couldn't fix.
Right. Jasmine took a deep breath. What was it you wanted me to try, Andrew?
He began flicking through his notes, agitated. While he was occupied, I leant over the table and squeezed Jasmine's hand.
You all good, sis?
Her eyes looked almost translucent.
Yeah. First day nerves getting the better of me. Feel like I can't breathe.
That'll be the dress,
I teased. Makes your tits look good, though. Jasmine let out a half-exhausted laugh, then smiled, thankful. Before I knew it, Benjamin bellowed for the entire set to be quiet and Jasmine was reeling off lines. In the right order, with her hands moving at exactly the right times. The clapperboard was snapped shut for an end board, and we were moving on to the next scene. Just got off the phone with Amara. Didn't realise she was at work, and I was happy to call back, but she wanted to know everything, and stat. So she's just been hiding from her prick boss Danny round the back of the club between the wheelie bins. Jasmine managed to keep it together for the rest of the day, but God, everyone was on her case. I told her. I might as well have not even been there. No one really spoke directly to me, except for Jasmine and the first AD.
AD?
Assistant director. Benjamin is like the big boy on set with the earpiece and the radio. He's in charge of everything. He started to be more understanding as the day went on, but if anything, Jasmine just got worse.
She flip a lid?
Amara prodded eagerly. No, I mean, she looked like she was going to pass out.
To be fair, that many crew members crammed into a box set while you're squished into a dress that's deliberately two sizes too small and told you're getting your lines wrong every other take, I'd be the same.
God, that sounds horrendous. Tilly will be disappointed.
Why?
She's been counting on Jasmine being such a bitch that you quit.
I don't think Jasmine's got a malicious bone in her body, Ma. Though, I can understand how her anxiety could come across as difficult to work with. I can't even imagine the pressure she's under.
Sounds like she's doing her best.
At least she's doing something. I'm just sat there doe-eyed.
And getting paid for it. I know which role I'd prefer.
Amara trailed off, the line going quiet. Everything okay with you? I queried, realising I'd rambled on about myself and not even thought to ask.
Oh, I'm fine.
Amara cleared her throat.
Landlord's been a dick as usual. Brother is back on the sofa as mum and her new fella have kicked him out. Oh, and I smashed my phone screen.
Jesus, Ma. That sounds awful. Why didn't you say anything?
It's fine, Mel. Don't worry about it.
Amara suddenly laughed heartily.
Oh, and Oliver's been asking about you.
Give over.
Yeah, came into work yesterday for a couple of drinks with his gym mates and said he wants to hear from you when you get back from Hollywood.
That's an interesting development. Amara hummed in agreement before informing me.
You do know that if you shag him, Tilly will never speak to you again.
I laughed. That's supposed to put me off, is it?
Chapter 8, 9th of January. Being starstruck doesn't last long when you realise most famous people are dicks. Fourth day filming. Today didn't start well. In fact, it didn't start at all. I was put into a car with driver Derma only 10 minutes after arriving.
We're going to have to move your scene to tomorrow, Mel.
The second AD, Carrie, apologised.
We're just not going to get everything done today. Is it all right if we send you back to the hotel? I can have a choice,
I groaned in my head. I got into the car, feeling very sorry for myself. I'd spent all morning waiting for pickup. I'd done at least 5,000 steps around my bed, 200 star jumps on my bed, and watched hours of stupid daytime TV counting down the seconds. All that only to be fobbed off upon arriving. Absolute bollocks. Carrie knocked on the windscreen while yelling,
Just one more for you, Dermot, before you set off. They're just finishing up in costume.
Dermot replied with something incoherent.
He's Irish and his accent is unbelievably thick. I've sat in the back of his car for an accumulation of about 6 hours during the last 4 days. We've had numerous conversations and I haven't understood a single one of them. Embarrassingly, it's all been guesswork. The back passenger door beside me swung open and I was blinded. A silhouette, large and overbearing, stared down at me, sunlight pouring in from behind. I'll go around. The door slammed shut and then the sound of heavy footsteps on gravel traced around the back of the car. Gave me the chills, like I was partaking in a thriller movie. Specifically the bit where the beast is circling the tent, only in the next moment to rip a side open and devour the closest character. Dermot gave me a knowing wink in the rearview mirror. Then the opposite door opened and into the back of the car collapsed. Jack Hart.
All ready, Mr. Hart?
I think Dermot asked. To be honest, all I heard was tall braided measurers. But considering context, I'm definitely going to go with him actually saying the former. Jack grunted, yeah, never looking up from his phone. Dermot revved up his engine and off we went in heavy silence. Jack's phone kept pinging, flashing, buzzing. Continuous flurry of texts, emails and notifications. My phone was basically dead. Like my social life, clearly. It occurred to me as we joined the motorway that Jack was willingly ignoring me. It wasn't as if he'd sat beside me never looking up from his phone and just not seeing me. He had seen me. Looked directly at me, made a conscious decision not to sit on my lap and now deemed me unworthy to speak to. This epiphany pissed me off. To a point where the part of my brain that causes me the most trouble started to talk, despite the rest of my brain's objections. As much as I hate small talk, there's really no way around it, unless you actually enjoy awkward silences in the back of a car with a stranger, which is fine if you do, but personally I find it a bit shit. Jack's head turned to face me in slow motion. He blinked.
What?
I was just saying it's quite a random situation we find ourselves in, thrown together like this.
Do you want to chat, or do you actually prefer silence?
Blink.
Sometimes.
Is this one of those times, or do you think you could manage a bit of small talk?
It'll make the drive go quicker.
Small talk?
Yeah, like, what do you think of the weather? Isn't it nice? Or hell, let's get personal. What's your favourite colour?
Blink.
Grey.
Mother of God! I thought, did he just say grey? I think that told me everything I needed to know about Jack. One word, one answer to a silly question, and already I can deduct he is unimaginative, bland and dull.
Because whose favourite colour is fucking grey?
Doubt very much he'd have been labelled world's fourth sexiest man if all those voters had known his favourite colour. They would have overlooked his undeniable good looks. His dirty blonde hair, luscious green eyes, smooth chiselled jaw, and just said, yeah, he's fit, but his favourite colour is grey, Susan. So that's a no from me.
What's yours?
What's my what?
Favourite colour.
Jack slipped his still beeping phone into his pocket.
Or should I ask the driver first? Let you have time to think, since it's such a poignant question.
Didn't take a genius to tell he was taking the piss. Dermot, I said sharply. The driver is called Dermot. Jack's brow furrowed as he turned fully to face me.
And what are you?
Crew? Cast, actually. I forced a smile. I'm playing Gabrielle's little sister. Jack's eyes widened momentarily.
Jesus.
For a minute there, I thought you were going to say you were playing Gabrielle. Who knew director Andrew could have competition for biggest wanker? A response that extreme, that just the thought of me playing his love interest? It's insulting. No doubt he was sitting there thinking I'm not famous enough. Not fit enough. Probably not fit at all compared to all of his previous co-stars. I don't remember Gabrielle having a sister in the script. My jaw clenched. It's kind of integral to the plot that she has a sister. Seriously, how have you missed that? Jack shrugged.
I've not had time to read the whole thing.
Translation. I've read my stuff and thought sod that to reading anything involving somebody else. Jack cleared his throat.
Was today your first, eh?
No. I started about 4 days ago.
I don't technically start till next week.
And why are you here? That came out bitchier than intended. I couldn't help it. He pissed me off. The Gabrielle comment had rubbed me completely the wrong way and I couldn't shake it.
I wanted out of the car, was even considering just opening the side door and rolling out into oncoming traffic.
Would have been less painful than the conversation.
I had a day free from violins and they needed me for a costume fitting.
A mischievous idea flicked through my mind. Amara would always play dumb with guys who were rude just for the hell of it. I never really understood it, but Jack was just too smug, too brooding and too self-obsessed to let the opportunity to irk him go.
What's violins? Jack's face fell, just a little. His genuine surprise reassured me of everything I'd assumed about this arrogant prick from the moment he fell into the car.
Violins in Vienna? It's a TV show.
His eyebrows twitched, his eyes scanning my face, looking for the wind-up.
Quite a big show, actually.
Oh, I shrugged. Never heard of it, but you know, good for you.
I have heard of it. Of course I have. It's hard not to without being a member of one of those untouched by civilization colonies. Violins in Vienna is one of the biggest, if not the biggest show on at the moment. You can't get through London without seeing Jack half-naked, posing with a violin on the side of a double-decker bus. It's one of those period dramas where the blokes wear top hats and breeches and the women all blush and swoon. It's filled with all the good stuff. Sex, murder, scandal, and of course more sex. Ian's favourite show, obviously, but not my cup of tea. I prefer old biddy quiz shows.
Anything you would have been in that I would have seen?
Jack asked, throwing a curveball into the conversation.
I felt my cheeks grow hot. The only reply coming to my mind was, well, not to brag, but I was in a toothpaste advert last Christmas. My teeth were the before shot. Nope, I replied instead. Don't think so.
Jack smirked triumphantly, which set my blood boiling.
Ding, ding, ding! We have a wanker winner!
But I've got a couple of work opportunities on the horizon, I lied. Unless I can count being promoted to pot washer and Christmas elfing at the local garden centre as work opportunities.
Same, Jack nodded along. Though, more theatre, thank God. I'm getting tired of being on set. Theatre isn't as good for the career, but I really feel the need to get back in front of a live audience, you know?
Yeah, I humoured him. I hated doing theatre. Going to see it? Love it. Maybe even writing for the stage someday. Ideal. But acting for the theatre? Torture. TV and film are so much easier. With theatre, yes, it has its charms. Rehearsals are gruelling, but with the right cast, they can be a lot of fun. You have the thrill of being in front of an audience, true, but only if people actually buy tickets. And even then, you can end up with a bunch of school kids on the front row who heckle, throw food on the stage, cheer at the end as if Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet is suddenly panto, and somehow Juliet stabbing herself is on par with Widow Twankey tripping over a paint bucket. I'm even considering doing something that's not the West End. Something really intimate. Like, when there's only 100 people in the audience or something. I think it will really help me reconnect with my craft. I stifled a laugh with the back of my hand. I thought I'd caught it, but Jack shot me a questionable glare. I'm sorry, I apologised insincerely. You sound like you've just been birthed by a top drama school. You say that like it's a bad thing. Jack's eyebrows furrowed. To some people it is. I let out a full laugh. I mean, you all come out of drama school, filled to your eyeballs with Stanislavski and Pinter, and a bunch of classical playwrights who've had maybe one good play and the rest that followed mediocre at best. You spend 3 years being told breath technique will get you the job, when really it's your mum having gone to school with the executive producer. And you're paying for the privilege to be taught by could-have-been actors who are so resentful of an industry that didn't want them, they're willing to build up the hopes of every sodding, cannon-fodder young actor waiting in line. And those teachers will smile smugly as each hopeful student inevitably crashes and burns. Unless, of course, one of their students is the exception to the rule, which I imagine was you. That one working class, usually northern, student who has that little bit of instinct that makes them stand out at their end-of-year showcase. First to be signed with a big shiny agent, and proudly your drama school can write all over their website about their stunning, successful alumni, forgetting to mention the ones who left crippled by student debt. No agent, and a 9-to-5 job in an office. From Jack's slack-jawed expression, I could assume I'd just hit the nail on the head. I wonder which school he belonged to. I'm guessing you never went to drama school then, Jack finally said in a mildly judgmental tone. Was that by choice or just because you couldn't get in? Now that wasn't mild at all, that was full-blown judgmental. I turned my attention to Dermot, the urge to throw myself out of the car more appealing with every passing second. Do you think you could drop me off in town, Dermot? I fancy a walk and some food that isn't room service. Sure thing, Mel.
Mel?
I couldn't explain it, but hearing Jack repeat my name made my throat close up and my inner thigh tingle. My cheeks burnt hot with embarrassment. Reacting like that just because he said my name? He said it out loud in a rusky, sexy, gravel tone just to piss me off even more. Fuck this for a game of soldiers. And you are? He smiled. Call me Jack.
Chapter 9, 14th of January. What can I say about hotel stays? Other than the fact I always seem to be put in a room adjacent to a couple who are too drunk, too loud, and too eager to have sex. It's my first official day off. Just a day. No biggie. I can find something to do. Easy. How many times have I wanted a whole day to myself at home? I could read a book, catch up on some correspondence, maybe even do some writing. Real writing. I don't just mean this. I could really make good use of my time today, and for once in my life, be proactive. Bored, 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 bored. TV doesn't have enough channels. I've got to get out of this room. Feel as though I've been sectioned.
Getting out of my room was a good idea for about 20 minutes. I felt high on non-hotel room air while taking a walkabout. I got lost pretty quickly. Every road looks the same. A Mancunian would probably say the same about London, to be fair. Talked myself out of buying Ian a tacky souvenir before eventually finding myself outside a cake cafe. The window display was calling out to me, and when Kate calls, I answer. The door to the cafe had a little bell above it that jingled announcing your arrival. Though, as it went off, no one from behind the counter looked at me. Three girls, all in a tight circle, were tittering by the coffee machine. I'm British, so naturally I didn't say anything or walk out. Just endured the poor service, waiting to be acknowledged.
Sorry, didn't see you there. What can I get for you?
The other two girls continued to giggle and whisper, every now and then popping up from their huddle like giddy meerkats. Just a breakfast tea and a lemon drizzle cake, please.
Sure, take a seat and we'll bring it over.
I went for the window. Might have looked odd not getting out a laptop or book, but I liked people watch, as Mum used to call it. Observe the silliness of life and remind yourself what you're momentarily a part of. She never said that. Mum was never that philosophical about it. Mum would have said, I like her coat. Do you think she'd do a swapsies? Or, oh, OAP's on tour. How many do you think will make it to the end of the day? The chances aren't looking good for the one at the back with the walker, that's for sure. I laughed to myself. Something funny. I almost jumped out of my seat. Sat opposite me, without having made a sound, was Jack. I wouldn't have recognised him if it weren't for the smirk. He'd had his blonde hair cut short at the sides but left slightly longer on the top. Definitely more fitting for a pilot than the style he'd had before. He looked cleaner and sharper, but still held himself like a smug knobhead.
Jesus!
No, just me. Hello, you. Another prick who refers to me as you. Bloody perfect. I shook my head. Sorry, do I know you? Jack grinned, amused.
We met in Dermot's car last week, he said. Mel, isn't it?
Poof! There went my cheeks again, because he said my name aloud. I needed to regain control of the situation before he started to think he was making me blush. Sorry, yes, hello. Good to see you again, John. His smile vanished and his face turned sour.
It's Jack, actually.
Before I could reply, a rattling cup of tea on a saucer was placed down in front of me, then my cake, then a fork. I looked up at all three quivering waitresses, whose eyes were all completely fixed on Jack. It finally made sense. Bad service because there was someone famous in the building. Good God. The one on the left had a wobbling bottom lip and looked like she might cry.
Is there, anything else?
The middle one sounded like she was buffering.
I mean, can we get you anything else, if you're staying? Maybe? Please?
I wanted to slap her. Shout, get a grip, woman, you're letting the side down. No wonder Jack has an inflated ego with this kind of thing going on around him.
I'll have another black coffee, Jack ordered, without looking directly at any of them.
For some reason, his eyes were remaining fixed upon me. There was a muffle
of course, right away.
I'll get there for you. And then a scuttle back to the coffee machine like a huddle of chattering seagulls. I rolled my eyes. Okay, I may have stumbled and got red in the face a couple of times with Jack, but at least I haven't been that bad. Bloody embarrassing.
Ignore them, Jack mumbled to draw back my attention. Enjoying your day off?
Yeah, it's been good, I lied, emptying two sachets of sugar into my tea.
I'm starting today.
Jack inhaled deeply, puffing out his chest.
My pickup is in about an hour, so I'm just trying to kill some time, not think about it, you know?
I sipped my tea. Almost burned my mouth, but I didn't know what else to do. I was sat in a cafe with Jack Hart. There wasn't a go-to procedure in my brain for this kind of thing. His coffee was placed down in front of him, then a napkin, then a fork.
Just in case you were sharing the cake.
There was a trio of giggles. All three waitresses were looking at me, then at Jack, then at me again, like we were playing bloody tennis for them.
Thanks.
Jack handed them a fiver, told them to keep the change, and with a dismissive waft of his hand, off they scurried. Was that how he always presented himself? He did something similar with Dermot. Never a goodbye, just a limp-wristed waft? Probably thinks himself as some sort of royal. He gets treated that way by us general public, so it wouldn't surprise me.
I'm looking forward to it, don't get me wrong. I've been eager to start, but it's a big scene. I have a lot of big scenes, but today's is tricky.
Was Jack aware he was still talking?
And I like World War II stuff. Plus, it's a nice change from violins, as that's more...
He slapped the table.
Oh, sorry. I forgot you don't know what violins is.
Pretty sure it's an instrument, I replied before picking up my fork. He laughed, then took a sip of his coffee before telling me I'd
have to watch it sometime. Download a few episodes when you get back to your hotel room. Let me know if I'm any good.
Then he winked at me.
Jesus.
I shoved a large portion of cake into my mouth and used chewing as an excuse for my lack of reply. This man was infuriating. I knew I was mistaking his sleaze for charm, and that in itself was beginning to fry my brain. Jack looked around the cafe, bored.
So, what do you think of Jasmine?
He asked, fixing his eyes back on me.
You've done enough scenes with her to form a strong enough opinion.
I shrugged. She's nice.
And?
And talented.
Okay, and what do you think of Andrew?
Cake crumbs were starting to get lodged in my throat, the lemon drizzle welding my teeth together.
He's thorough. Think the film will turn out well?
I shrugged again. It's not for me to say. Jack bit his lip and I felt my whole face go numb.
Have I done something wrong?
Debatable, I thought.
Because I'm a bit stumped as to where the chatty Mel has gone.
I laughed, uncomfortable.
You've asked questions, I've answered.
That's chatting, isn't it? Jack leaned onto the table, drank some more of his coffee and chuckled.
When we first met, not that you remember it, you talked your head off. Chatted about favourite colours, small talk, drama school. I took you for some bubbly, opinionated sort of social chatterbox. Now I can't so much as get a full sentence out of you.
He leaned even closer.
Why?
I racked my brain for an answer, eventually sputtering out, "First impressions can be deceiving?" He raised an eyebrow and softly smirked.
And what was your first impression of me?
You're a twat, I thought.
That bad, huh?
I did a double take, wondering if Jack had read my mind, because I know for certain I hadn't replied out loud. Jack smiled charmingly as he played with the spare fork, rolling it between his fingers.
From what I can tell, I never really stood much chance of coming off well with someone like you, though, did I?
Our conversation was abruptly cut short, as the three waitresses had annoyingly made their way back to the table, one with her phone gripped tightly in her hands.
Sorry to bother you, she blubbed. Would you mind taking some photos with us?
Jack plastered on the biggest, widest, smuggest smile I'd ever seen.
Yeah, of course.
He took her phone and practically threw it at me.
You don't mind taking a photo of me with my fans, do you, Mel?
I ground my back teeth together and begrudgingly obliged, all the while thinking, I hate him. I actually hate him. Click, click, click. Photos taken, a flurry of thanks given, none to me, of course, and before I knew it, Jack was draining his coffee and pulling on his coat.
Right, I better be off.
Jack headed for the door.
Try to remember me next time we meet, would you?
He then gave me his signature waft of the hand, and with a jingle of the bell, he was gone. I want to say I casually got on with my day after I lost sight of him, but that would be a lie. A big whopper of a lie. I literally did nothing else but fester and fume over that prick. His words circled around my head for the rest of the day.
I never really stood much chance of coming off well with someone like you, though, did I?
Someone like me? What the hell had he meant by that? Was he calling me prejudiced? Or just accusing me of being unable to relate to someone like him? Because I'm normal and he's not.
He's famous, and I'm not. I'm just some run-of-the-mill Yorkshire lass with frizzy hair and wonky teeth who in any other situation Jack Heartthrob wouldn't be seen dead with.